Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Are smiley faces passive aggressive? And are those two little hands praying, or is it a high five? Emojis landed on our phones back in 2010, but where do they come from? And does anyone know what half of them actually mean? Well, Vivian Nunes and Sarah Treanor of BBC Two's Smiley Faces podcast have all of the answers. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
I just want to get straight into this. I'm very passionate about emojis, and I think it is a millennial thing. It's kind of my generation that I'm afraid to send a text message, even to my boss, without an emoji afterwards to kind of convey what the conversation is. Is it passive aggressive? Is it happy? Is it sad? I'm guessing you guys feel the same.
Absolutely. I mean, we love emojis, which if you've listened to any of the episodes, you probably have worked out, because there was a lot to get through and we went in some weird and wonderful directions. But yeah, both of us use emojis a lot and use them in our communication with each other a lot, which is kind of where this whole thing started.
Sarah, I'm going to come to you with this one. What was the original idea behind emojis and where did they start?
Well, we have a bit of a clue as to where they started on all of our emoji keyboards, because if you scroll right through the food and drink and even further, you have a lot of items, beverages, strange little sort of desserts on sticks, a nice, beautifully illustrated bento box. They started in Japan. And there's a really a good reason for that, which was that basically emoticons, which are, I guess, the kind of precursor to emojis, which is when people do a little smiley face with punctuation or a little winky face, they became really popular in Japan. And then when the first kind of generation smartphones were being launched in Japan, the people, sort of the money men, said, hey, look, we should probably launch emojis, because a couple of the Japanese phone companies had already started doing them and they'd just absolutely taken off.
But Vivian, how did they end up on everybody in the world's phones? Like, how did we get them?
The big technology companies that had really started to dominate both the internet as we know it today and also mobile phones, so I'm talking about Apple and Google, they wanted to bring their products like Gmail and the iPhone into the Japanese market. When they were talking to people there, they realized that emojis had already taken off, and actually they were advised if they want to introduce their products to Japan, they should really get on this emoji train too. So they took it back to California, to Silicon Valley, where this group called Unicode meet. And they asked them if they wouldn't mind adding some initial emojis, some basic ones, so about 750 of them, to the standardized keyboard, which we also use for all other kinds of characters. So every letter of every alphabet as well is on that Unicode list. They agreed, and so companies like Google, Apple, Twitter, Facebook all started offering the very same set of emojis. And that's why if I were to send you a love heart or a smiley face, I know that my phone will send it to you and you'll see exactly what I want you to see. As a result, we all got the same emoji keyboard, and everyone all over the world with a smartphone, or even if they're just using Twitter online, it has those same symbols at their disposal.
So emojis are basically a universal language. Like, just like you said, you know that you can send me a love heart and my phone will receive it as a love heart. And I suppose they translate perfectly all over the world. But why are emojis not a language?
So this is a bit of a point of contention with sort of people who are very academics in the sort of linguistic space. They insist it's not a language. They say, how can you have a language that's just such a limited set of characters? How can you have a language where we don't know what the past tense and the future tense means? And how can you also have a language that a lot of users use in a very different way? So, you know, someone might send me a a certain vegetable or fruit that they want me to shop at the supermarket or are cooking for dinner, someone else is going to interpret that very differently.
And I'm guessing that it's the aubergine we're talking about. Let's not beat around the bush on this one. I'm guessing that this is used...
Aubergines and peaches.
Aubergines and peaches. I know. I would class them as universal for something completely different. I would never send those to my other half for a shopping list. But on dating apps, the aubergine and the peach are definitely used.
They are, and particularly on the gay dating app Grindr. You might have heard of it. It's very successful as a way of people finding hookups online. And on there, emoji use has really become a real lexicon. We actually visited a gay bar in West Hollywood to find out about this. And some of the people there were telling us how you look at someone's dating profile, you decide if you want to meet up with them, sometimes because of the emoji that they've put in their bio. So that would tell you their interests, but it might also tell you, how shall I put this, other things that they're into, involving some of those fruits that we were mentioning earlier and vegetables. So you really have to know the code that's being used in a community like that so that you don't make a mistake and that you interpret what's being said by other people. And that's something we found in other forums as well and other subcultures. It wasn't just dating apps where people have made emoji into a kind of code. There was also criminal gangs in America who were using emoji on Twitter in a way to brag about their planned crime. So they might have a policeman, they might have a cash emoji, they might even use the petrol pump, because gas is another word for marijuana. And we spoke to an academic in America who had studied hundreds of these tweets by gang members, kind of deciphering exactly what these emoji mean. And one that made me laugh was the little running man. They used to put the running man every time they were fleeing the scene of a crime.
Stop it. So, I mean, emojis can mean different things to different people, and that must be dangerous when it comes to court cases, Vivian, is it?
It is, and this is something we spoke to a barrister about. She thought there was a real potential for miscarriages of justice, because you have some old fuddy-duddies, really, in the legal system in many countries, you know, the lawyers, the judges. Really, that leaves people with a difficult situation when you have crimes these days involving technology. So we've all become so used to, or many of us have become so used to, sending a quick emoji with our friends that it really has become a way of communicating. And that means sometimes some of those text messages are submitted as evidence when there's a court case. But if you have lawyers and judges who don't know about emoji and don't want to know, they just write them off as something really frivolous and that young people care about and don't have any meaning, well, you might be missing the real meaning of what that emoji use was in that text message. And she really urged people in the legal community to get across what emojis mean and how they're used so that there wouldn't be any miscarriages of justice.
She's absolutely dead right as well. You mentioned there as well that in the justice system and in court cases that it's a lot of old fuddy-duddy people, your words, not mine, who don't understand what emojis are and have no interest in using them. But then why are there so many weird old-fashioned things on our emoji keyboard that we never use?
That's a fantastic question. And I think we've all... If you're like Vivian and I, and you've had a good old look through the emoji keyboard, you've stumbled across the fax machine and the pager, and you've thought, why is this here? You know, a floppy disk. I mean, I think the last time I saw one of those maybe was when I was at primary school. But, you know, the reason is because Unicode, the group which decides and votes on new emoji, as Vivian was telling us earlier, who also encode all the world's languages so we can communicate all across all platforms, they've decided once something's an emoji, it's never taken away. Once an emoji, always an emoji. And that kind of leaves them with a bit of a problem, because sort of leads us to the question of when are they going to stop? Because you can't just keep adding to something infinitely like an emoji list, because it would just become unusable.
That is,
and this is why. This is why there's so much controversy over every time a new emoji is added. You know, there are people out there who who are so passionate, even more passionate than we three are about emojis. They really see injustices when they see gaps in the emoji keyboard. We spoke to two women who work in the drone industry. They're really fighting to get a drone added to the keyboard. And that involves a long process of writing a proposal, sending in designs, and really convincing those people, those technologists in Silicon Valley that, hey, the world needs this emoji. But that's why there's so much controversy and deliberation over every new one that gets added to the list, because there can only ever be a limited amount. And that's why a lot of people get rejected, basically.
Well, I mean, half of the Irish nation was up in arms about the fact that there wasn't a ginger emoji on the keyboard for so long, and they got their way with that. But everything has its time. So what are the chances that emojis will be overtaken by stickers at some point?
Oh, yeah, this is something that we were really interested to explore towards the end of our series, because we'd wondered ourselves why there were so few emojis that were anything to do with life on, say, the African continent. And we stumbled across a really fantastic animator in Zimbabwe who's created his own set of stickers that have hand gestures and foods which really relate to Southern African culture. And he said, and someone we also spoke to, a graphic designer in China, said something similar, that emojis are so limited that stickers are now the future. Stickers are what everybody's using. They're more fun. They're more sort of adaptable. You can create your own. They were also really into GIFs. But it's an interesting thing, because I do still think that there's a real sense of validation from people who have proposed an emoji that then gets approved and it gets put on every device and every platform in the world. I mean, that's still something a bit special.
I quite like that. And just going back to the sticker point as well, Instagram are bringing in a new feature now that there'll no longer be a swipe up link from, I think it's the 30th of August. They'll be using a sticker top instead. So they're really pushing stickers. So if you've got big companies like this behind it, then I don't feel like they're going to go, or I feel like they might try and take over with the stickers, but I'm here for a good old emoji. I want to go to you, Vivian. What has been your favorite story behind an emoji?
Oh, so many. I think the most meaningful one was, though, the story of a woman called Irene. And she was in San Francisco at an emoji conference, actually, a few years ago. And she worked with another lady called Yi Ying, who is a designer who's actually had many designs added to the emoji keyboard already. So lots of the Chinese food designs, the takeout box, the chopsticks, even the fortune cookie. They met at this conference, and it was nearly the end of the time when each year you could submit proposals for new emoji. But as they were having lunch, they walked through a nearby shopping center and they saw peacock decorations everywhere. And Irene also worked in a Burmese restaurant, and in Burma, the peacock symbol is very significant. So they really felt like, hey, there are peacocks all around us and nobody's ever made a peacock emoji. We should propose it. But they thought, it's too late this year. It's never going to get it done in time, this long proposal we have to write. Then they decided, hang on, we can pull an all-nighter. We can do this. They got the proposal in and it got shortlisted. So that meant it had a very big chance of being added to the emoji keyboard. Yi Ying was messaging Irene to tell her the good news. But sadly, Irene had passed away and we don't think she ever knew that the peacock emoji then went on to be approved by Unicode and added to all of our phones. So we spoke to some of Irene's friends and they see it really as away from Irene in heaven, that there is this tiny symbol in not just everyone's phones, but their phones as well. And every time they see it, they can think of her.
So fab that her legacy is living on. And it's actually so mad to think of how much work goes into an emoji when we're thinking about it all the time and we're just going, oh yeah, emoji in your phone, use XYZ. You don't think that there are big organizations like Unicode and people like this who have to submit proposals. But it's mad. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me. That is Vivian Nunes and Sarah Treanor. You can hear more of what they've discovered on the Two Smiley Faces, part of the BBC World Service documentary podcast. We'll be right back after this.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.